Just yesterday, Hollywood A-lister George Clooney called on President Joe Biden to drop out of the presidential race. He joins a growing list of Democrats who say Biden should bow out as fear grows on the left that former President Trump could win re-election. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today, we're going to look at what this means for Ohio and U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown's own re-election campaign and the potential implications for Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. Plus, just ahead of the Republican National Convention, we'll talk about what U.S. Senator J.D. Vance's chances are for a spot on the GOP presidential ticket. Joining me now are Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law Jonathan Enten. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Glad to be with you again, Lucy.
Great to have you here. And University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science, Stephen Voss. Thanks so much for being here, Stephen.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
The Democratic defections are growing. There are top lawmakers meeting with President Biden behind closed doors. Jonathan, what do you think those conversations have been like?
Probably pretty awkward. It's very difficult for people to go to their party leader, somebody who has been not just the president, but before that, vice president and multiple terms as an influential senator, and tell that person that they think that the time is up. They may even have trouble putting it in quite those terms face to face, but clearly these are difficult conversations.
What do you think, Steve? Is there any way to deliver a message like that more gently?
Well, I mean, we may have all been in the position of having to have that sort of conversation with relatives with regard to driving. I think regular voters can understand how difficult such a conversation would be. The thing I'd add as a political scientist is keep in mind it's not just those concerned Democrats versus Joe Biden in that conversation. The Biden administration is a group of people. And if some other Democrat took over the role as nominee from Biden, then that has real repercussions for the careers and lives of a whole team of people behind Biden right now.
That's a really interesting point, Steve. Do you think President Biden is digging in his heels and that maybe that's part of why he is?
Well, we know, at least publicly, he's digging in his heels. And if you're trying to explain why would he do this, I mean, he's had 4 years. This could have been a great victory lap. Why is he doing this to himself? I think it helps understand the motive if you don't only talk about ambition, as Clooney did, but also think about the interests of the team, which, you know, Biden, if he cares about the people who have devoted themselves to him, likely will be taking into account.
Jonathan, who is President Biden taking advice from right now, or is he taking advice from anybody, do you think?
I don't know who he talks to. Presidents often just keep their own counsel. It's reported that he talks a lot to his wife, which is not surprising. But as Stephen says, it's pretty hard to tell somebody who has been in public life for more than 50 years that the time is up, especially when he ran last time as essentially the normal candidate who might have been the only one who could defeat Donald Trump. And if you've won that sort of race, it's really hard on the fly to change your perspective. Even if you are devoted to the party and the team overall.
Meaning that if you believed in 2020 that you were the only person who could defeat the other party, that maybe you still believe that.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the folks who are urging the president to withdraw are saying, well, that's not really true anymore. It might have been true 4 years ago, but it's not true now. And that's a pretty big mental adjustment for anybody to make.
Steve, what sense are you getting that President Biden will stay in the race or drop out? I know he's been very publicly saying he's staying. Do you think that'll hold?
I mean, you shouldn't trust the public statements because he'll be saying he's staying until he drops out if he drops out. That's sort of par for the course. What we're in the middle of right now is a feeding frenzy. You know, Biden was able to almost walk into the nomination because members of the Democratic Party and affiliated groups were unwilling to risk wounding him. But now there's blood in the water, and all the people who never much liked Biden anyway, but also some new recruits who are just scared that Biden can't defeat Trump, they're all starting to feed. And, you know, whether that pressure is going to add up to enough that he decides to step down, I mean, I certainly don't have that sort of insider knowledge to know.
Sure. Jonathan, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you been placing your bets?
I retired from betting on anything when I was in graduate school more than 50 years ago. So, no, I'm not placing bets now. I do think that part of the concern that people are expressing is not simply that Biden cannot win the presidential election. It's also a sense that if he is perceived as a weak enough candidate, he could hurt Democrats at in the Senate races, in congressional races, and in some state races. And so one of the things that people have been talking about is not simply that Biden will lose, but that the Republicans will essentially run the table. And given that the parties are so far apart on policy these days, from a lot of Democrats' standpoint, having the Republicans run the table would be a real disaster.
We're talking about the presidential race, the push for President Biden to drop out, the implications for Democrats in Ohio and Kentucky, and the upcoming Republican National Convention. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jonathan, you were just talking about the implications for other races, for Congress, for the Senate. Overall, what does the Democratic Party have to lose if he stays in the race? What's at stake if he drops out? I want to ask you both this, but I'll start with you, Jonathan.
Well, if Biden is a weak candidate, then Republicans will not only win the White House, but the Republicans already have a favorable map on the Senate side. The Senate is very closely divided. The Democrats are defending more seats than the Republicans, and a fair number of the Democratic Senate seats, like the one in Ohio, are at least difficult. And so if the Democrats lost 4 or 5 Senate seats, then the Republicans would have a reasonably comfortable majority in the Senate. Meanwhile, we've seen in the House that the Republicans have had the narrowest of majorities and have had some difficulty in deciding exactly what they want to do because there has been so much turmoil in the Republican caucus. But again, if the Democrats have a bad November, then the Republicans may well add to their House majority. It might not be a landslide, but it might be a large enough majority that Speaker Johnson will be able to accommodate a certain number of defectors on policy and still be able to get Republican initiatives through the House. And if they can get through the House and you have a majority Republican Senate, then at least some of those measures will get through the Senate as well. And with a Republican president, they'd become law.
Steve, what do you think? What does the Democratic Party have to lose, in your view, if President Biden stays in the race? What's at stake if he drops out?
Well, let me start with the implications. I agree with what Professor Enten said, but let me add, we're used to a slim majority in this Senate not being able to do a lot because of the filibuster. And Mitch McConnell, the senior senator from my current state, has been one of the champions of keeping the filibuster, and he was even when the Republicans would have benefited from getting rid of it. So Mitch McConnell will no longer be the head of the Senate, and I'm not so confident that the filibuster would survive his successor. So, another Trump administration with a Republican majority in the Senate may look different and may be a lot more powerful than the Republican administration that he was able to lead last time around. As for, the overall down ballot implications in Senate House races of having Biden versus someone else. I don't think that's entirely clear. I'll mention another Kentuckian, our governor, Andy Beshear. He was able to win in Kentucky despite the fact Republicans otherwise swept the statewide races. Voters are willing to split their tickets and to do so in large number if they've got reasons to distinguish between the election for the one office and the election for another. It's not clear Biden hurts. The concern is that Biden doesn't mobilize the Democratic base, and they're just not there in the electorate at all. And if they won't show up for Biden, then maybe they won't be there for the other Democrats on the ticket.
We'll be back after a short break to continue this conversation. And later in the program, we'll discuss what a multi-month break can mean for employees and their workplaces. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the presidential race, the push for President Biden to drop out, the implications for Democrats in Ohio and Kentucky, and the upcoming Republican National Convention. My guests are Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law, Jonathan Enten, and University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science, Stephen Boss. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have gotten some emails from listeners. Sue Ellen emails, "In my view, the Democrats are going to throw this election if they don't stop giving the media stories day after day about Biden's incompetence and potential disability. These are people who have worked with him to rebuild the economy and reestablish U.S. manufacturing and support low and middle income citizens. If they weren't worried about his competence before the debate, they should get behind him full steam. I am not willing to write off 3 years of excellent work because of one poor showing in public." Steve, I want to ask your thoughts on that, because there has been some pushback that the media is making a big deal of this and that, the administration has done good work. What do you think about what Sue Ellen has to say there?
I mean, the question of whether asking these questions helps or hurts the Democrats comes down to something we really don't know yet, which is whether Biden staying in the race means the Democrats lose and Democrats get a President Trump. In terms of the polling, Biden has slipped, and he already was teetering in terms of, winning in the Electoral College. If those numbers are right, then and the slippage sticks around, then that means a President Trump. And so Democrats are kind of hoping that by moving past the age issue and starting to talk about the Heritage Foundation's project, sort of set of conservative proposals put out through the Heritage Foundation, that they can redirect the discussion and the effect of Biden's debate performance will ebb. But we really don't know that that's true, that shutting up about it will solve it. And that's a sort of a leap of faith.
We also got an email from Nancy. Nancy emails, "Who do you think can possibly win the election in lieu of Biden? Can a candidate really convince the non-MAGA people to vote for any new person?" Jonathan, what do you think?
That's the big question. We're very close. Well, we're practically at the Republican convention, and we're very close to the Democratic convention. There wasn't really a process that created the possibility of an alternative candidate until now. And so the Democrats would have to try to improvise some kind of process. And that would subject them to some kind of claims that if they came up with an alternative to President Biden at this point, even if the alternative were Vice President Kamala Harris, that the Democratic candidate was not chosen by the people, but rather by the modern day equivalent of the smoke-filled rooms. And party conventions have not served the kind of screening mechanism that the old smoke-filled room mechanism fulfilled in many decades. So it's not even clear how you could get a person out of this process who would be viewed as somehow a legitimate candidate. And that's a real challenge, no matter what process they use.
What are your thoughts, Steve?
I want to point out something funny about this perception of what democracy is or isn't. In the official Democratic nomination process, voters essentially were not given a choice. Why? Because they weren't offered any other A-list Democratic politicians to, you know, decide whether they wanted them or instead Joe Biden. That's nonetheless seen as democratic because they walked into voting booths or, you know, filled out pieces of paper and accepted the only real choice they had. And yet to have all these important democratic leaders, some elected, some who've been party insiders for, you know, their whole careers, working with voters back in their territories, to gather in a meeting and pick the leader, we view that as undemocratic. And it's really kind of a perverse view of what is or isn't democratic that we're focused so heavily on whether voters walked into a box.
Hmm. Now, I agree with that. I'm just saying that we live in an era where a lot of people view things or will view things that way. Part of the problem is what are public perceptions today, even though Professor Voss is absolutely right, that it's not as though the system that we used to get to the Biden nomination was a completely open one.
We got an email from Steve from... Oh. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say, yes, I didn't intend my comment to be a disagreement with Professor Enten's perspective. I think he's right that to have the convention pick the nominee would be seen as an illegitimate smoke-filled room process. I was just trying to take it to the next level that it's ironic. Mm-hmm. We would treat that somewhat representative process as not democratic and yet treat the Biden anointing as democratic.
Right. I think we're on the same page on that one.
Yeah. We got an email from Steve from Oakley. He writes, much of the conversation seems to center on if it is a winnable presidential race and its impact down the ticket for the House and Senate. My concern as a citizen slash voter goes beyond the politics, but is the capacity of President Biden to serve to the end of a second term when he would be 86, by far the oldest president we will ever have had. And that brings up that age issue. Jonathan, do you think that's, you know, one that's going to be tough to overcome?
It is, but let's recognize that the second oldest president we would have had if the election goes the other way is Donald Trump. And it's not as though Trump is a young, vigorous, thoughtful candidate either. Part of what has led to so much unhappiness among voters is the sense that they don't like either of the candidates. But maybe for policy reasons or other things, they may have a preference. But if we had someone who was widely perceived as young and creative and thoughtful and honest on the other side, we'd probably be looking at pretty much of a landslide. But because Trump is not perceived by a lot of voters as an acceptable alternative, we've got a fair number of voters who are looking at these candidates and saying, well, I don't like either one of them, and I will either have to hold my nose and vote for the less objectionable one, or maybe I don't vote at all.
We also got an email from Lee, who raises this point. He's still in the race because he's been doing a great job as president of the United States. This is a feeding frenzy of spiraling panic after a very bad debate. Also exhausted by media engaging in this convo, including today's show, I'm sorry to say, at the expense of not talking about the frightening Project 2025 and what that will mean to every individual in this nation. Now, Project 2025, I believe you referred to that before, Steve. That's this Heritage Foundation document. President Trump says it's not his plan. There are people who were part of his administration who've been very involved in the plan. And if President Trump were elected and if this Project 2025 plan came to fruition, it would mean some major changes, wouldn't it, Steve?
I mean, the Project 2025 proposals are quite extensive and would represent extremely major changes in a lot of policy areas. Now, you know, in terms of a campaign issue, though, whether campaigning against a Heritage Foundation set of proposals is the more effective way to defeat Donald Trump rather than campaigning against Donald Trump's own policy positions, that's more of a question. I think this focus on Project 2025, which has been around a long time, and yet all of a sudden you see that it's reverberating in Democratic and progressive circles a ton, I think the main reason that's it's become the talking point is because it's an attempt to get people to stop talking about Biden's age, which is the topic we've had and the topic that your email asked us to address, which is Biden's suitability for office. The reason I think the discussion has been about electability is because it's mostly a discussion taking place among Democrats and people who want to see Donald Trump lose and who oppose Project 2025. And really, let's put aside other possible Democratic contenders, they're debating a strategic question. Are they more likely to get a President Harris by getting Biden elected and then having him step down because he's infirm, or by having Vice President Harris become the nominee? That's what a lot of this discussion is about. Do you get a shadow campaign for President Harris or a direct one?
We have Barb on the line. Hi, Barb. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I just wanted to address what the voters voted for in the primary when those of us that voted for President Biden voted for him. I voted for that person at that time, how I saw them representing. At this stage, that's not the same person for me. So in terms of what the voters voted for, I don't think that is happening. That person's not there right now. So that I just want to add that to the mix because I'm really free and I would like to see this person replaced. Thank you.
Thanks, Barb. Appreciate your call. We appreciate your listening. We also got a call from Lee. Lee did not stay on the line, but said Lee is upset by the guest's use of the word anointing President Biden. He wasn't challenged in the primaries because he was doing a great job. And Lee says, can we please talk about Trump? Now, Jonathan, before, I believe you talked about how, you know, former President Trump, it's not like he's a young person. He's got his own track record. How much is that playing into this conversation? Should it be a bigger part of the conversation, do you think, Jonathan?
Well, the question is the conversation among whom? I mean, Biden has been generally admired by Democrats for having accomplished a lot of their policy goals. And that's why he wasn't challenged. There is a history of incumbent presidents who want to get reelected, announcing for reelection and not being challenged. Indeed, when incumbent presidents are challenged for renomination, that's a sign of weakness and usually is a bad sign for their prospects for reelection. So a large part of the question is, who is in play in the electorate at this point? We know that there are a lot of folks who support Biden because they support his policies, also because they think that Trump would be an utter disaster from their standpoint. But there are a lot of folks who support Trump because they think that they like whatever they think his policies are going to be, but they really don't like Biden and the Democrats. The question is, if we're thinking in strategic terms, who is in play? And there we're talking about a comparatively small number of voters in a relatively small number of states who will tip those swing states toward one candidate or the other and will essentially determine the outcome of the presidential election. And so a large part of the strategic argument has to do with the question whether Biden is now, rightly or wrongly, perceived by the voters who are likely to make a difference as lacking in the qualities, the physical and mental capacity to do the job. And so it's not like we're talking about an across-the-board phenomenon here. We're talking, in strategic terms at least, we're talking about which voters will make the difference in the presidential election. And I think that the people who have expressed concern about President Biden at this point are largely thinking in those terms.
Jonathan, you spoke earlier about the impact that this, having President Biden at the top of the ticket could have on Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, who's in a very difficult reelection campaign. Sherrod Brown, of course, being a Democrat. And Steve, you mentioned Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about Governor Beshear because his name's been floated as a replacement at the top of the Democratic ticket if indeed President Biden decides to step aside. He's also been mentioned as possibly a vice presidential running mate if Kamala Harris is at the top of the Democratic ticket. And I've read these commentaries by people who are advocating for Governor Beshear who talk about how effective he's been working across party lines in Kentucky. Steve, I wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think Kentucky Republicans would agree with that?
No, I'm definitely not the politicians. The perception is just the opposite, that Beshear has mostly refused to work across party lines, at least if you listen to what they're saying publicly. What Beshear has been successful at doing is packaging a mostly Democratic and reasonably progressive set of policies in a way that has not run off red state and somewhat conservative voters. He's been very effective at the messaging. It's not because he's a great flamboyant speaker, or even a great sort of smaller group politician. He's got very good use of rhetoric, very good use of language. He knows how to frame Democratic and progressive policies in ways that don't offend swing voters. And that's what he's been effective at, I think, is talking to fairly conservative voters.
So you think that's kind of what he could bring to a presidential ticket, just that because he doesn't have big national name recognition now, but that ability to possibly appeal to swing voters is what he could bring?
As a vice presidential nominee, you know, supporting a candidate from a state like California, obviously he would give some nice balance in terms of how his political career has developed. I do think some of what he's done in Kentucky could scale up. I don't know, you know, as a presidential candidate, I'm not so sure the Democratic base is looking for a message of unity and we can work together right now with Donald Trump as the Republican nominee. They're looking for a fighter. And if he wanted to be considered as the top of the ticket, I think he'd have to convince a lot of people he's willing to bring that battle to get nasty.
Jonathan, I want to ask you, too, real quickly about the Republican National Convention that starts in Milwaukee on Monday. We've been hearing that former President Trump at any moment could announce his vice presidential pick. How seriously is he looking at Senator J.D. Vance, the Republican from Ohio?
He seems to be looking at Vance pretty seriously. And one thing that hasn't gotten a lot of attention because in the discussion about Senator Marco Rubio, Rubio and Trump are both from Florida, and they can't both be on the ticket if they're both from Florida. So that might actually count in Vance's favor because he's got a relatively high profile. He seems to be close to Trump, and if he were to be elected vice president, Governor Mike DeWine would be able to appoint his at least temporary successor. And so that would mean that you'd have a Republican filling Vance's seat if he became vice president.
Well, there is a lot more we could be talking about, but unfortunately we have run out of time. I've been talking with Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law, Jonathan Enten, and University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science, Stephen Voss. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks
for having us, Lizzie.
Up next, we'll hear what a multi-month break can mean for employees and their workplaces. This is Cincinnati Edition.